We are joined now in the studio to help wrap up the week and get the month off to a good start by Mark Dorison, chair of the Orange County Board of Commissioners. How are you?
Oh, it's been a rough month, my friend. It's funny.
Well, it only just began.
It's been the last month. I'm looking. This month is going to be very good.
Yes.
I thought you were going to introduce me with your speaking of the elf market. So.
Now you've put the idea in my head. I got to go back and start all over again. All right. So a couple of things to talk about. We'll get to the Orange County Board of Commissioners meeting with the Chapel Hill Carver City School Board in just a minute. Need to talk about the latest development with the UNC Center for Civil Rights, which is that this was kind of a sudden development, right? That you and Elizabeth were technically going to lose your jobs on January 12th, and that got moved up to yesterday, right?
That's right. We were originally given our notices that we would be employed through January 12th, and we're preparing to use that interim period to transition all the cases out of UNC. Elizabeth Haddix, my colleague, and I are going to continue to represent all of our clients, do that in our individual capacities, and we're in the process of working with the clients to effectuate that transition, and then. Just before Thanksgiving, we're called in and notified that the law school had determined that those terminations ought to be accelerated to November 30th, yesterday.
Mm. Did they say why?
I think the concern was, they didn't specifically say why. I think the concern was that that there was the issue with the Board of Governors, and then there was this letter of caution issued by the state bar in response to an anonymous complaint that the law school had in structuring the center hadn't done it correctly, and that they were warned about the unauthorized practice of law.
Mm-hmm.
I think, I don't think that justifies accelerating the date. I think we were prepared to make sure that there wouldn't be any work on these cases on university time or with university resources. And I think they felt like they just didn't want to have to deal with that at all. So, unfortunately, it put our clients in a particularly difficult position because we had to get authorizations from them, in writing to take the files with us, to transfer the files. And that just couldn't be done quickly over a holiday, a long holiday weekend. And so we worked very diligently in the last few days to do that, and we were able, we've been able to get all the documentation that we need. And so what's exciting is we're looking forward to launching the Julius L. Chambers Center for Civil Rights, which is going to be an independent nonprofit that we will continue this work under. And so we thought we'd have more time to set that up as well, but certainly that is the next phase of this work. The advocacy will continue, the representation of clients, the research that we've been working on for years, and also hopefully the training of law students to be the next generation of civil rights lawyers.
For your clients, the ones that you're advocating on behalf of now, other than having to get written authorization to move the files, what has this transition meant for them?
Well, the representation will be the same. I mean, mm-hmm. that was the key. And Elizabeth Haddix and I have been the lawyers primarily representing them, sometimes with co-counsel. And so, part of the reason this 8-week window was valuable was so to ensure that transition was seamless, that there would be no confusion, no interruption of representation. And to have to compress that into a week, again, before and around the Thanksgiving holiday, is just very challenging mm-hmm. and very confusing for clients. That was especially troubling. I think the university general counsel and the law school were focused on this letter from the bar and didn't really give appropriate consideration to the clients we represent, and that should always be the primary responsibility of a lawyer.
Mm. Speaking with Mark Dorison, managing attorney for the UNC, former managing attorney for the UNC Center for Civil Rights. You'll have to get new business cards.
I threw away a whole box.
But getting new ones because the Chamber Center is starting up very
soon. That's right,
I'm very excited
about that.
Yeah. So what is that going to entail, and do you have a better sense of the time frame on that?
Well,
now?
I mean, we've already incorporated under, it's a nonprofit, North Carolina nonprofit corporation. We're working on putting together the the 501c3 application. We have a fiscal sponsor, the Center for Community Self-Help at Durham. So we're able to get tax-deductible contributions. We've got a website and an online donate button at last going up hopefully today. And what it will entail is, what we'd like to do is, as closely as possible, replicate the model of the Center for Civil Rights that Julius Chambers, the legendary civil rights lawyer and North Carolina icon, really, that he developed, which was this sort of threefold mission of direct advocacy, community-based research and public education, and training law students to do public interest social justice work. So that's the model. We're going to try to replicate it. Some aspects of it will be easier than others. Certainly, not being part of a law school will make the student training piece more challenging, but we are prepared for it. And fortunately, we've had so many students work with the center over the years, and many of whom have said they came to UNC Law School because of the Center for Civil Rights and to have the opportunity to work there. So I'm confident that we'll be able to keep those relationships going and also be able to bring in now students from other law schools like Duke and Central and Campbell and Elon. And so really, really deliberately build that piece of the mission.
Will that be, I don't know how to phrase this question, are relations with the UNC Law School going to be important in terms of keeping those connections going?
Yes, I think they will. And, we have good relationships with a lot of the faculty. Both Elizabeth and I have taught at the law school. I've been adjunct professors. I just finished this semester teaching political and civil rights. Next semester, I'm teaching state and local government.
Good
and
class.
So Elizabeth taught education law this year and has taught housing law in the past. So, we have good relations with a lot of the student groups, student organizations. And so we really will work to continue that foundation that we laid.
Speaking with Mark Dorison, shift hats here and talk about the Board of County Commissioners, because you just had a big meeting. This was last week with the Chapel Hill Carver City School Board. Some really difficult decisions are going to have to be made about funding capital projects, because there was bond money for two projects, and now it looks like maybe only one with cost overruns. So where do things stand there?
Yes, so the voters of Orange County passed the bond in 2000, was it 16, I guess?
It was 16, yeah, last year. And it's been a very long year. 2017
It's been a long, terrible year.
I said to someone that it feels simultaneously like the year has flown by and that it's been going on forever.
Exactly, yeah. Right. it is, as they say, I don't know, I guess it's Latin, has been the annus horribilis.
Yes.
So,
yes.
But the voters in 2016 passed a bond, $120 million for schools, $5 million for affordable housing. Mm-hmm. Of that $120 million, that is split between the two districts. About $70 million, roughly, for Chapel Hill Carborough. And there were two projects that they were bringing forward, the renovations at Chapel Hill High School and the Lincoln Center project, a pre-K center, new administrative offices, new Phoenix Academy facility. They got bids on that Lincoln project. They came in much higher than the school district anticipated. And so the question became, what are they going to do? Mm-hmm. That was the meeting that we had with the board. Try to get a sense of what their goals were, what their priorities were. And I think there's not enough money to do the two projects as originally envisioned. So the decision is going to have to be made on what to do with that money. And that is a decision that the school board is going to have to make. A lot of people have been calling me and saying, you should fund this, the high school, and not fund the Lincoln Center or vice versa. And the truth is, the county commissioners really have minimal ability to control that decision.
Was this just them coming to you and giving feedback on, or
that's
just an
right.
update on where things stand?
Yeah, they were giving feedback. Candidly, they wanted to know, does the county have more money that they can put into the pot to make up this difference? And what the commissioners told them is we don't. We don't, with the bond, we're at the limits of our borrowing by state law. And, when you're talking about making up you know, $18 or $20 million, it's just not possible to do why, you know, that's a, you know, I don't even know what it is, but it's 10 cents on the tax rate, 15 cents. This is inconceivable.
Do we know why the, and I'm sure the answer is yes, but why the bids came in so high for Lincoln Center compared to what they thought?
Well, you know, one of the reasons that was proffered was the hurricanes that hit have raised the construction costs because of the demand. There have also been suggestions that the time it's taken between developing the projects, getting the money, getting the bids. I don't know. It seems to me as a layperson as a shockingly higher than expected.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I think I imagine you're supposed to build in inflation into these projections because these projects take time. But the challenging thing is that, you know, the voters approve that money.
Right.
And so the school board is entitled to that money.
Mm-hmm.
And so the challenging thing for the board and for the county and for the whole community is how are we going to adjust to this new reality of these costs? So among the suggestions that were bounced back and forth during that meeting was, could the Lincoln Center project be scaled back? Could it be phased in? Part of that Lincoln Center project that was exciting to me personally was the pre-K center, because what that would do is pull pre-K students out of elementary schools, thereby freeing up capacity at the elementary schools.
That was a long-term cost-saving thing, right, to prevent having to build another school down
the road. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things the commissioner said when the school board first came and said, we want you to do a bond. One of the things we said was, we'd like to see in any renovations increased capacity so that we could delay any new school construction. And so that part of it is, I think, is particularly appealing. I personally am less enamored of new administrative offices. I don't know if the Phoenix Academy building has to be built right now.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, so that was one of the ideas. Could it be phased? Could part of the project be done and part of the money be put at Chapel Hill High School? There's a lot of questions. Some folks question that the student growth numbers, is there really a need for this additional capacity at this time? But it's, you know, we can bring the power of the bully pulpit to bear, but ultimately, if the school board decided tomorrow we're going to do the Lincoln Center project no matter what it costs, the voters have approved that $70 million. Similarly, if they said we're not going to do it, we're going to do the Chapel Hill project and we're going to do some other things, they could do that. We will try to give as much input. We're trying to reflect the needs of the communities. But ultimately, the decision of what the priority is belongs to the school board.
And all of this is sort of underneath this larger umbrella of $120 million, as much as that is, being kind of a drop in the bucket in terms of what's actually needed, right? And it's, what, $400 million or something like that?
Yes, $350 million or something. I mean, that's exactly right. And there's been talk of a second bond at some point. There are real facilities issues. There are needs for renovations at Chapel Hill and other schools. There is also what we expect is this pressure coming from the legislature about reducing class sizes in K through 3, which even if you don't have an increasing, just generally increasing student population, if those classes have to get smaller, you have capacity issues.
Yeah.
So trying to navigate all of that, I think Superintendent Baldwin had suggested putting together a little a collaborative working group of county staff and Chapel Hill and the school board, and hopefully we'll get some ideas out of that. One of the things that would be great, the bid on Lincoln Center is supposed to expire at the end of December, and so there's sort of this deadline. Because if it has to get rebid, presumably it'll be even more expensive.
Right, right.
So one of the things that would be great is to see if the school board could go back and ask the developer who put in the bid to extend it for another 30 days. But we haven't even gotten the bids back on the Chapel Hill project, so we don't even have a sense, is there something anomalous
about...
And that
could be even higher,
that's
too,
right?
Yeah.
It could be even higher, or it could indicate maybe there was something anomalous about this project that we didn't account for. So,
are there other counties or other school districts that have this similar problem, or do we know?
I don't know. I mean,
yeah.
I think there, you know...
All of these are school board questions, but,
right,
yeah.
But there, I mean, I think that, you know, there's sort of there are some standard metrics for looking at what a school construction costs. You know, it's a limited universe of people who do it. And so, but I think everyone, was taken aback by the amount of the overage of these bids.
Yeah. Speaking with Mark Dorison, orangecountync.gov is the county's website, by the way. If you want more information, got a meeting coming up on Monday, next meeting of county commissioners. What else is on tap for Orange County that people ought to know about?
Well, we're going, you know, the commissioners, next Monday is our organizational meeting, so mm-hmm. we'll be electing officers again. You know, I'm hopeful that my colleagues will consider keeping me on as chair. I think I've done a reasonable job. And but we're also, you know, there's we got a good, interesting report at that last meeting on manufactured housing. We had our housing department do a really comprehensive, in-depth study about the, you know, the needs that manufactured housing presents, the pressure that is on residents in manufactured housing, you know, particularly in some of these manufactured housing communities in Chapel Hill, along MLK. There's a lot of pressure for redevelopment. What's going to happen if one of those parks gets bought? Where do those folks go? It's a, you know, it's one of manufactured housing is one of the most affordable housing options available in our community, and lots of folks rely on it. And so we're really looking forward to continuing the discussion on how that becomes part of our affordable housing strategy. We've also got a meeting coming up to talk about the Green Tract, which also has an affordable housing component. And I think, you know, there's a number of interesting economic development issues on the horizon. We had a public hearing 2 weeks ago about development in the Hillsborough Economic Development District, which mm-hmm. is the area around the intersection of Old 86 and I-40.
Just south of 40,
yeah,
right?
Just south of 40. Yeah. And so there's some interesting opportunities there. And I think the discussion is also helping us think more broadly about economic mm-hmm. development and, you know, both the opportunities that these districts present and also their limitations. So there's a lot going on, as always.
Very cool. OrangeCountyNC.gov is the website. Go there and find out more. Mark Dorison, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Aaron. It's always great to see you. In the middle of this dark time that I find myself, getting to talk to you, getting to spend some time with you is always like a bright ray of sunshine.
Thank you so much.
Great.